I guess I'll just make a quick opening comment to say thank you to CAST. If you're not aware, I mean, what CAST does and the importance of science and the importance of technology and agriculture really gets to the heart of, I think, the bigger context of food security that this World Food Prize is all about, as well as Norman Borlaug that was really the founding visionary for all of us and why this even event exists today. And I think CAST gets to the heart of what the leading solution is, which is better innovative ideas. So I thank CAST for what they represent and encourage you all to get to know that organization. So could I summarize quickly the essence of the message today from me? And let me just share that we will be coming out with a report in early November that really, I think, represents the heart of this issue called food security, which the real basis, I believe, the premise is there's no issue more important in the next 7 years than food security. And let's be very clear, food security is simply when food is a non-issue. And so the context of what I shared was in this report is we're highlighting it as the enough report. We've talked enough, kind of enough is enough. We have enough technology, and there's a positive ending to this story. What's occurring right now is we are a few numbers just to remember real quick, like some headlines. There's three numbers that I think are important. There's 3, there's 60, and there's 1.5. 3 is simply that we all know we're living past a population of 7 billion, and I say we're living between the 7 and the 9, 7 billion and 9 billion. And don't forget that this is not an infinite problem. Population's actually going backwards in Japan and in France and, you know, soon to be China. So this is not going to go on and on. But during our working lives, this 7 and 9, there's 3 billion emerging to middle class. The next 7 years, we'll put more people in the middle class in all countries all over the world than any time in the history of man. So this 3 billion middle class is a big deal. Number 2 is 60. 60% increase in meat, milk, and eggs will occur between now and 2050. Diets are going to improve. Diets are going to change. That's going to create a dynamic that's critical to supply meat, milk, and eggs 60% more than we have today because of this middle class. And then the last is 1.5. World Wildlife Fund, I think, does an amazing job of saying today we're living on 1.5 planets. Sometime in middle of August, I saw come through social media, like probably some of you, we went past the we've used up our annual use of renewable resources. So we're now living on extra time. So if we're on 1.5 planets, need 60% more meat, milk, and eggs and more food, and we've got 3 billion people that are going to have better lives, the essence of all of that is, to me, innovation, choice, and trade. The solution to food security is innovation. That can be clean water, genetics. That can be better nutrition and optimizing nutrition and feeds to animals across the board. Trade is meat, milk, and eggs. All food must travel, must move. And lastly is choice, and that's giving the consumer what they want. And with that, people can get what they want. So that's the essence of the message. Question is about the importance of protein. I can just summarize. I shared a landmark study that was done in Kenya. This is not just about more calories and getting people calories, but it's also about the quality of the calories. This study that was done in Kenya looked at the essence of really protein and the importance of that. And they took test scores of kids, and they kept certain kids on the current diet that they were on. Their test scores actually went down 10%. Then they supplemented with oils just in equivalent of calories. Their test scores also went down about 7%. A milk diet actually increased significantly, 20-some percent, and a actual meat diet went up 44, and I would say soybeans are the same thing. The importance of protein in this emerging middle class is going to be essential. We can't just get enough calories. We have to get enough of the right calories. Rice and beans alone is not enough. That's absolutely critical. Well, I think it's critical to, you know, we had a dietitian on the panel today. I think it's important that we're engaging the people that are influencing diets, school lunch programs, looking at the importance of, as she highlighted very nicely, is it can't be one or the other. There's not good and there's bad. It's balance and being able to put that in place. So if I'm a soybean farmer in the United States, I think it's absolutely critical that one engage in the dialogue. You know, don't just get your news from the CBS 6 o'clock news. Get on social media. Get a Twitter feed and start following some of the people that are for you and maybe not even for you to understand. And then let's develop our message. Let's get the key things that are critical and start to influence first the people that are around us in our own communities and then the influencers that are more significant. The question is, you know, profitable enterprise. I think someone defined a major CEO of one of the largest food companies was sitting with me not long ago and said, I define sustainability as something that's profitable. It needs to be sustainable. I think there needs to be collaboration between public and private and government, no question. We just talked about that in the panel discussion. But we must enable innovation. We must, you know, be able to look at innovation that can create value for farmers, food chain, all over the world. We can't be scared of globalization. America is at the heart of the most productive nation in the world in food. We need to turn this into economic opportunity as well. And I emphasize very quickly that and we had Chuck Connor on the panel that talked a lot about the importance of trade and policies within trade. Listen, don't let someone fool us that, well, it's food miles, it's not good. No, food moving is actually more sustainable. It usually only represents about 4% of the footprint. So if you can produce it more efficiently somewhere, it ought to move. And it can get good calories, the quality of calories, whether it's soybeans or chicken, to another country is an opportunity. So opening up more trade, taking politics out of trade is absolutely critical. The question is around Elanco's announcement on a full value beef program. You know, the essence, I'll kind of take this into the context of what even this meeting's about, is we must optimize the performance for us of a beef animal. It could be a hectare of land in Brazil. It may be an acre of soybeans here in Iowa. Bottom line is we've got to be continually looking for optimization. A concerning fact that was shared in the earlier discussion is actually the pipelines are not as plentiful as they used to be. Our productivity is flattening. This should be concerning. It should be a concerning to American agriculture. Our voice around policy, both in Washington as well as at the state level, we need to play a role there. That would say is one of the leaders in meat, milk, and ag innovation is enabling our pipeline, you know, starting here at home, but taking it globally is absolutely critical. We're not getting, 10 years ago, we were getting a lot more support with land-grant universities. There was a lot more collaboration than there is today. And so we need to, one, more collaboration with universities and enabling more policy to allow that to happen. And two is more support of innovation. And that can come from everything from simplifying and aligning regulatory policies to enabling trade standards to allow technology that's used in one part of the world to travel in the food to another part. Okay? But a full value pig program is just simply how do we optimize for that beef farmer in America and around the world? How do we get the next 10% productivity? If you look at the beef industry, they have not been beyond break even for over 18 months. And it's our goal is how can we help them with data to knowledge, diagnostics, not just a product. And Elanco's moving beyond products to say it's our goal to get another 10% productivity out of a pig operation, a beef operation, you know, poultry operation as an example. Okay. I would say, first of all, to everybody in the room, you do a very critical job in terms of communication. And I think it's very important that we look at this in a bigger context. Our world has changed a lot in the last 7-10 years. Our measures of what we think a consumer thinks need to change as well. So I highlighted what I believe are the three most important measures when someone says, this is what the consumer wants. So when any time I run into anyone on an airplane to a government body and they go, but my constituency or my consumers don't want this, I stop and I say, tell me, where did you get your information? Here's the three measures that I think are absolutely critical. We need to move from headlines of newspapers, which is a monologue that goes out and we don't even know the response, to media mentions, looking at papers, YouTube, social media, Twitter, and understanding, hey, are we getting 4,000 or 5,000 mentions on this topic a day? If not, it's probably not news. If it doesn't sustain itself for 3 days, it doesn't matter. So I think understanding dialogue, we can do that now. We didn't have that 7 years ago. So media mentions to me tells you more what a consumer thinks than a headline in the newspaper. Second, I think it's important, it's not a call inquiry line. A call inquiry line is usually a complaint line for a retailer. There's a lot of retailers and food companies in the past that you got to monitor that. You got to watch that. But that is not the voice usually of the consumer. You got to look at maybe their purchase card and the SKU data, because usually people really vote more with their wallet and where they spend their money. And the last is, whenever you look at a survey anymore, I really look very carefully at surveys to say, and there's a lot of technology food surveys that are aided questions versus unaided questions. Do you really want meat that comes from this with all of these things in it and an animal raised in this terrible condition, yes or no? Versus, what's important to you when you buy dairy products? So my summary is, key question here, what consumers want, what we're finding first is go to the three top measures that we have today that we didn't have 10 years ago. Media mentions, okay? Unaided questions and SKU purchase data. And I think what we have found is 99% of global consumers want taste, cost, they want nutrition, and they want, those that have money, they want some choice. I want organic. I want a little luxury. I want it locally grown. Less than 1%. They're making this a social movement to try to change the way farming is done and make it less productive. That's what I think we need to speak up to, and know that it's only 1%. One, I think we need to continue to talk about the gap that occurs. I think Chuck Connor said it well. I mean, politicians need to hear this. They need to hear the significance of this in terms of, if we can't get a laser focus with our message, it's difficult enough within the governments to have laser focus. So if our message is diluted and hard to understand, then a politician that's struggling today with staying focused, that even becomes more so. So I think it needs to be very clear. The second thing I think is innovators need to be very specific to say, hey, I have a technology in dairy. I would like to go up the road and work with Purdue University or Ohio State, and I would like to do this. But I need to be very clear. I have options. I have options offshore as well. And to be very clear to say, this can create jobs. This can create first registration here in the U.S. This can create economic opportunity. I think sometimes we can get diluted by talking so much in terms of general that we need to say, hey, here's a whole new platform that could have a breakthrough. And I know a lot of innovators in the plant space and in the animal space that have breakthrough platforms of technology, then we need to enable it by being very specific. I think that's important. I know we got to wrap. I just want to say one final thing. I opened up today, and because you are so vitally important, as I look here, I say you're the ones that communicate to the people, and you're the ones that determine how the communication is construed and what the headline is. So you have a very important role, I believe. I want to just emphasize that we have to look at a bigger context than just when I was at this meeting 5 years ago. My message and the majority of the messages was the hungry. We're here for the hungry. And I opened up today to say, I believe, yes, the hungry matter. But I believe we've numbed a lot of our audiences that you communicate to with the extreme, the UNICEF commercial that's very hard to relate to and understand. And I believe that's only one of six different faces that we come across every day around food security. It spans not just from the hungry, but it spans from a lot of people that can't get a meat, milk, and eggs. They eat a lot of rice and beans. That's the calorie. There's people all over the world that it's a hunt, where every day it is, I don't know where I'm not going to starve today, but I don't know when and where my food's going to come from. And I think that's another one that I think is important. You know, there's another one that I'll just quickly go to that I think is very important that a lot of your readers and a lot of the people that you communicate to, and that's the quality of calories and the ability to say we need to make more food affordable and more accessible. Grocery stores need to be more accessible in urban markets and food deserts throughout here, even in the Midwest. It's absolutely critical because the obesity problem, I sat with mothers, I shared, that I can see our headquarters of our building in Indianapolis from, and I sat around a table with three or four mothers, and they had one thing in common, and they were heart-wrenched sad. And what their problem was my SNAP dollars or my minimum wage job, if I have to buy my groceries at a drugstore, I'm getting soda, not milk. I'm probably buying a packaged food Pop-Tart, not eggs. And what's happening right now is they all sat there saying, and one mother looked at me and said, I have a daughter. It's 12 or 13 years old. And she is obese. but she's skinny in the mind, and she didn't pass the state education test. And that's the wrongness. My challenge to all of us, and there's even the face of, I say, my kids and all of you, we have food traditions. Thanksgiving's coming up. It's quiche in Paris with our France team I was with last week. It is protecting food traditions is important too. And one of the paper we'll release will talk about the six faces of food security. My challenge to all of you is the people you communicate to and yourself, you'll walk by probably every day, somebody may not know, of a face of somebody that's struggling with the security of food. And my challenge to all of us is let's think about this in a bigger context than just the extreme hunger situation. This is, to me, the hottest issue in the next 7 years, but the story is positive. Go to sensibletable.com and join this movement. Make food security your part of your movement, part of your cause. This is not about Elanco. It's not about caste. This is about, to me, food security. Okay. Thank you for what you do, and have a great World Food Prize.